of Europe had been fascinated for the past few days by televised images of avalanches descending in the wake of storms on certain ski resorts and pretty villages in the Alps. Caught for the screen by cameramen safely distant, the snowy plumes were as beautiful as waterfalls or clouds, and thrilling, too, in that it always stirs the human heart to watch nature assert her propensity for malicious destruction. Despite the usual preventive measures taken with dynamite and seismograph, some ancient chalets were engulfed completely. Some modern structures of concrete were imploded in a bizarre fashion never before studied. In one place, inhabitants were killed with the power of a tidal wave or volcano. In others, the possibility of life beating faintly in an air pocket under an eave stimulated massive rescue efforts, organized from the Austrian, Italian, and Swiss Alpine patrols, as well as the local French ones. Yet, with characteristic resolution, ski lifts stayed open when they could, and skiers, having booked their precious vacances d'hiver, still ventured resolutely out onto the slopes that were open. Unaware for the moment of the dangers at the higher reaches, Amy Ellen Hawkins, a dot-com executive from Palo Alto, California, had defied the usual injunction never to ski alone. She was trying out new parabolics, an innovation since she had last been on the slopes, and she thought she had time for a run or two while the light was good, even though the snow was already falling. In the several days she had been here, the terrible weather had mostly impeded any skiing at all, and now that her jet lag had worn off, she was too restless and eager to stay indoors any longer. Amy was an experienced skier, but wished to be better. She had chosen the Hotel Croix Saint-Bernard in Valmarie, France, for a couple of weeks' stay, as part of a personal program of self-perfection, an almost superstitious way of placating the gods for her recent good fortune. Humbly, she would seek mastery of deferred skills like skiing, cooking, and speaking French, and she saw no reason she should not approach them with the discipline and effectiveness that had marked her career in the decades since she had left college. By the time Amy reached the top of the chairlift that swayed up the mountain above the hotel, the cell phones of the liftmen still higher above were crackling with warnings. Visibility had already deteriorated markedly. The new sort of ski turned out to have an independent wish to turn despite her, requiring an effort of understanding she had not expected. And the terrain was steeper than an intermediate advanced slope would be at Squaw Valley, with strange intervals when she could not determine whether she was going down or up. Not a whiteout exactly, but an eerie, one-dimensional landscape that seemed to have no undulations or contours. A cool-headed person, she kept her nerve, reminding herself of the reassuring facts of gravity. If she was sliding, she must be going downhill, and she allowed her skis to carry her. Now, face stung with snow, she was just thankful to have finally made her way in the failing light down the difficult slope on which she had found herself, and was stashing her skis by the entrance to the ski room at the Hotel Croix Saint-Bernard, shaken and sobered by this immediate lesson, and suddenly aware of the reverberations of what sounded like dynamite in the distance. She saw that, though it was still early afternoon, many people had come in already. 40 pairs of skis or more wedged into the wooden grid, poles jammed into the deepening snow. Unlike Amy, the other guests seemed all to be Europeans and must know something about the weather that she had missed. She looked back at the slope she had just struggled down, now hardly visible in the snowfall, and it occurred to her she had narrowly escaped death. "Miss Hawkins," it was the man who had been referred to as Baron Otto who was greeting her, scraping the snow-packed bottoms of his boots against his bindings and frowning at her. "People have come in early," she said, feeling herself flush at being faced with speaking to this censorious person. Amy sometimes felt reticent, though she was not timid. Her success in corporate life had come about the way some actors who stammer and blush in private life come to power and authority on stage. In private, her sweet smile was found pliant and endearing. She was also modest and sociable, and now surprisingly rich, as had happened to not a few in her same year at Stanford.
"Indeed, the warnings are posted everywhere. Didn't you see them? They're written in English as well as French."
"Oh, yes, of course, I hurried in, but I wasn't sure of the route," she said. She was still shaken by her adventure, and by the fact that she hadn't seen the warnings, though she had scrupulously read the posted times for closing of the lift she had been on, not wanting to miss the last ascent.
"The pists are plainly marked."
His tone was still censorious. Her kind of beauty, he was thinking, was peculiarly American, the beauty lent to a face by an optimist's temperament. Optimism, however, unwarranted. He could see she was a person with high hopes. In looks, she might have been an Austrian Mädchen, with her thick braid of caramel-colored hair, bright cheeks, and a dimpled face of unusual sweetness. Her half-breathless, alert quality must come from an awareness of the constant possibility that her high hopes could be dashed. It was essential in his line of work, property development, to be good at reading faces and perceiving dashed hopes. The Quai Saint-Bernard was a cheerful, fashionably simple, family-run hotel, with some of the affectations and prices of a grand one, quiet and discreet, standing apart to one side of the central piece on a road of private chalets, distant from the après-ski scene of the village itself. From hints given in the brochure, Amy had gathered that it was the choice of diplomats taking a break from Geneva, the occasional adulterous couple, well-off families with young children who like an early night, assorted Euro-trash eccentrics bored with the relentless après-ski pace found in the larger hotels, and above all, those who wanted to take the fabled cooking classes offered by the hotel's celebrated chef.